The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Morning to you guys. I'm happy to hear the two Howards are back in the team again. Just a snippet before we get into the main stories. I read an article which caught my attention, which says that the Mossad and the IDF intelligence branch prevented 50 terror attacks by ISIS and Iran over the past 3 years. Many of them were planned to take place in Turkey. And that's interesting for me because here the Mossad and the IDF intelligence branch are working hard to prevent these attacks, especially in Turkey, which of course we know has somewhat dubious relations with Israel at the moment. Yet, you know, that doesn't stop the Mossad from working to really prop up the regime of Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Even though I understand that he's kind of been weakened at the moment as a result of political events in Istanbul in particular, but around Turkey. But anyway, just something small start the day with before we get into the main story.
Yeah, interestingly enough, Anthony, I have noticed over the last couple of months that he hasn't been as vocal around Israel around his anti-Israel feelings as he has before. And when I read this report as well, I thought to myself, well, now this makes sense because I definitely got that sense that he just wasn't as filled with anger and hate as he has been, but obviously that's just my own speculation and understanding.
Well, I think this goes back 3 years. We talk about attacks that have been prevented over the past 3 years.
Certainly in the last 3 years, he has not been a friend, right? Absolutely.
Yeah,
so.
He's had a lot to say over that period of time. But I read somewhere that some local government elections in Istanbul elected the opposition party, and so Erdogan effectively has been weakened quite substantially at the local government level, and there is a feeling that this might be the beginning of the end of the Turkish Sultan as we know him today. So we will watch that.
In fact, when he didn't like the elections of Istanbul, he called for a revote, and they did, and he lost again.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that he called for a revote. There's nothing like being beaten once when you can be beaten twice.
Absolutely. Just ask Netanyahu. All right. Hamas held a surprise emergency drill across Gaza yesterday. What was the purpose of this drill?
So this caught my surprise in a number of different ways. First of all, because, of course, there was a drill at all taking place across Gaza. And the fact that it was a little surprising, it seems, for the Israeli intelligence. I'm not sure whether they really were getting the right intelligence on this particular issue. Fortunately, it wasn't something that necessarily presents a threat to Israel. But I would have thought that, our intelligence services would be on top of this one. But it seems as if though this is kind of, you know, like a drill that we would expect to have in Israel where some sort of an event is made up. And everybody has to kind of respond to it in a certain way. And apparently yesterday in Gaza, Hamas actually closed all the land crossings. They prevented fishermen from going out to sea. So they undertook a number of different emergency drills, well, things that they deemed to be appropriate within an emergency situation. And so the question that was being asked is whether this, in fact, was something that had been planned previously or whether it was just kind of a reaction to the latest events. Some of the things that kind of might have given rise to this are, first of all, of course, the discovery of that tunnel that we spoke about yesterday, and therefore the feeling that Israel might well have been in a mood to retaliate against the discovery of that tunnel, and therefore perhaps the emergency situation was called as a result of that. Not clear, to be honest. The other thing, of course, was that yesterday marked 5 years since Operation Protective Edge. And even though in Israel these kind of things really are not made a big deal of, but for some people at least, it does represent a significance, a date of significance. And certainly Hamas felt that for them it was kind of an anniversary of a celebration of some victory, because they feel that they were somewhat victorious in Operation Protective Edge, having held out against the strength of the IDF. And of course, we still have the bodies of those two Israeli soldiers, which are being held by Hamas, which, at least for Hamas, is considered to be something of a victory. So perhaps, you know, the drill that was held yesterday was, in conjunction somehow, was linked somehow to the anniversary of that date. But all in all, You know, the fact that Hamas is having a drill like this kind of makes them almost look like they could even be a government of sorts, some sort of an authority which has responsibilities and actually carries out some of those responsibilities towards their people by being ready for emergencies. Up until now, the regular emergency drill that Hamas has undergone is to push their leaders underground, probably underneath where the hospital in Gaza is, in order to protect them from any danger. And that's kind of been the extent of the emergency. But on this occasion, by closing the crossings and preventing fishermen from going out to sea, it's considered to be slightly wider scale. I guess we're still going to have some thoughts and some commentary about what the significance of this drill is. But the fact that they even held it at all has obviously given rise to some speculation and to people giving some thought to how Hamas is operating and what this really means going forward.
Anthony, there have been reports of a secret meeting in Iraq between officials from the US and Iran. Obviously, this could have an impact on the current standoff between the United States and Iran. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that this changes much between the United States and Iran. I mean, Iran seems to be very intent upon contravening any and all of the terms of that nuclear agreement that was reached in 2015. They are very proudly announcing that they've exceeded the limits, both in terms of the amount of enriched uranium that they're holding, and now also the percentage to which uranium is being enriched. There was a limit of, I think, 3.67%, and they proudly announced that they're reaching 4.5% and going upwards. So, I mean, even though that's still very, very far from the 90-odd percent that's required in order to produce a nuclear weapon. But, you know, Iran now is being seen as, you know, really being happy enough, you know, very happy and very public in contravening this agreement and really challenging the European participants in particular of the P5 plus one nations who signed that nuclear agreement 4 years ago. But the fact, and also another point which came to my attention is the fact that the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff has been trying to put together a coalition of countries to help safeguard, to help protect the waters off the Straits of Hormuz, off Iran, in order to allow tankers to sail through there safely, because as we know, some tankers have already been attacked, and since the British government was helped in taking a hostage a tanker that was off the coast of Gibraltar, which was of Iranian origin, it seems really to have upped the ante, and the expectation is that the Straits of Hormuz have become a much less safe area for countries who were involved in the P5 plus one, or Western countries in general, to allow their ships to sail through. So the U.S. military is now trying to put a coalition together under the chairmanship of the Marine General Joseph Dunford, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And they're trying to put a group together who will actually go out and militarily protect the Straits of Hormuz to allow those tankers to sail through. So it's just another small escalation. But I think the fact that there seems to be some level of dialogue, albeit at a relatively low level, I think is good news, because if we kind of take the current standoff to its logical conclusion, then one could argue that it's only going to go in one direction. It's going to either require military intervention to stop Iran from enriching uranium to levels that will allow it to build a nuclear weapon, or Iran will simply build a nuclear weapon. That seems now to be the obvious trend, the obvious place that the current situation is going to. And if there is some sort of a dialogue that can somehow convince Iran that this is not in its best efforts, it's not in its best interests to continue down this track, I think that that would be a good thing. And ultimately, I think the dialogue is a lot better than standoff. And, you know, as I say, this standoff to me is only going in one direction. And that was just reinforced by Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday when he was visiting an Israeli Air Force airbase. And he was inspecting in particular the relatively new F-35 stealth fighters known as the Adir fighter in the Israeli Air Force. And his comment was that he's been on an impressive tour of the airbase, and that Israel has all weapons and systems and planes, including the idea which he specifically referred to. And then he said, that Iran has been threatening the destruction of the state of Israel. And Iran can do well to remember that these planes can reach anywhere in the Middle East, including Iran. So that was a clear threat set down by the Prime Minister about what Israeli military is prepared to do in order to protect itself and in order to prevent Iran from building that nuclear missile. And so this kind of standoff seems to be going only in one direction, even though, you know, Iran's economy is clearly the loser because the economic situation in Iran is suffering immensely as a result of the sanctions that have been imposed upon Iran.
All right. Speaking about the economic situation, Google has just bought an Israeli cloud storage company for $200 million. What attracted Google to this company?
So this is a company called Elastifile, and this company has in particular the ability to provide a cloud storage facilities to enterprise grade clients, so large clients, and the software that surrounds this cloud storage enables organizations to scale their performance or their capacity quite easily. And this whole scaling idea, the ability to use a little bit more when you need a little bit more, or use a little bit less when you need a little bit less, and of course pay accordingly, has become kind of the theme of the day in a lot of technology-based companies to allow people to really adjust the amount that they use of anything, whether it be cloud storage or whether it be processing power or whether it be any of the other, you know, things that we're seeing being produced now on a huge scale and being provided in very, very scalable solutions. And I think the smart thing about Elastifile is that when they launched their product earlier this year, they actually fully integrated it with the Google Cloud platform to begin with. So they went in knowing that they were going to use Google Cloud platform as the base for the solution. And of course, Google became aware of the solution and became very interested in the solution and has now made an offer to buy the company for this $200 million, which, by the way, compares to the amount of money that has been raised so far by the company, being $75 million. So one could argue that those people have put money in, $75 million in all, will be making a fair return on their investment, more than 100% profit on the investment they've put in. And of course, the people, the entrepreneurs who are involved, some of them are serial entrepreneurs, people who made, you know, successes before of companies that they've started up. And they obviously are going to do well out of all of this. But I think it also just points to the fact that Israeli technology is so hot at the moment on the international scene that a company like Elastifile, that's only been in business for 5 years and only really launched its product earlier this year, its product of any significance, and already has quite a number of significant customers, like Forbes, for example, using their system. This is very hot property, and companies like Google have teams on the ground in Israel looking out for opportunities, companies like this, to buy up and to integrate into their own solutions to make their own solutions a lot more attractive. So, you know, Israeli technology is very much still out there. And even though, you know, we don't always hear about the latest developments, except when you have, you know, the very, very big headline acquisitions. But here's a relatively small acquisition, $200 million, you know, in the overall scheme of things in comparison to some of the other Israeli companies that we bought is relatively small. But this is a great profit and a nice little addition
absolutely
for the Google
amazing
platform to take on. Yeah.
Yeah, and amazing, just basically underscoring Israel's technology status. And it's almost like a shopping mall for these technology companies. It's about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. That is the Israel Report. We bring that to you every morning at 7:45. Anthony Reich speaking to us live from Israel. It is 8 o'clock.